Welcome to I Hate It Here, the podcast for HR and people professionals, making the hardest job in the world just a little bit easier. I'm Hibi Youssef.
Some people don't want to move up, and they've been told that the only way to get more money is to move up and to be a people leader, even if you don't want to lead people. And so this is why it's so important to have these like tracks where you're like, you can be an individual contributor and become like, quote unquote, an expert, or you can be a people leader. So that people are not leaders who don't want to be. I have flat out had people tell me, I never wanted to be a leader. This was the only way for me to get more money. So if you set it up that way, that's the only way that people feel like they can grow. So it's set up to be like, you must move up instead of you must actually grow professionally. Because sometimes moving up, you're getting more responsibility, but sometimes you're getting more money, and that's a different story.
Welcome to another episode of the I Hate It Here podcast, season 4 kickoff. Here we go. I think it's season 4. I'm pretty hyped for my guest today, because we're going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. It's all about quitting today, because it's a tale as old as time. An employee gets tired of an employer shit and says, F it, I'm out, and quits. And with Gen Z, with more Gen Z entering the workplace, that timeline is quite condensed. So the average time in role is decreasing. I think in the past, everyone would say millennials only stayed places 2 years. Now I'm seeing Gen Z folks say that they would quit a job in as soon as 6 months. So today I'm bringing back my really good friend and fellow self-proclaimed quit queen, Jessica Winder, to talk about why employees quit and what HR can do about it. Jessica, welcome.
Hello, hello. I'm so happy to be back as the unofficial co-host, which I have been myself. What's up, quit queen?
My unofficial co-host, she is back. At least once a season, you get an episode of me and Jessica. So far, nobody has canceled us. So we will be here at least once a season.
Our day's coming.
I live for it. My favorite thing recently is that you were on Reddit. People were screenshotting your posts.
Listen, go look at the Reddit. They came for me. They always come for me. But I don't mind it. I actually enjoy it.
Subreddit LinkedIn Lunatics. It's really my new favorite subreddit.
Literally, if you haven't been on there, like, have you really even made it? So your day's coming, Hibba.
I have not. I was like, wait a minute, I'm not even on this. They haven't put me on here. I'd be saying some crazy shit too. Okay. But I loved the post. I loved the post that you posted because they put her on LinkedIn Lunatics, y'all, for saying HR is not your friend.
Yes. Okay. That it literally went viral. Like the post went viral, and it's not anything new.
I was like, everybody else can say HR is not your friend, but an HR person says HR is not your friend, and suddenly you're a lunatic.
Yeah. Suddenly I'm the worst person in the world. People were like, I can't. This is why I would never want to work for her. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't want to work for me because I know I'm not your friend, and I'm not going to act like it. I'm not going to gaslight you. Why do you want to be gaslit?
I'm not going to lie to your face and then turn around and in quiet meetings try to fire you.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't you rather somebody be transparent and honest? But no, it broke the internet. It went viral. Literally, it's all over the place because I said I'm not your friend. And if y'all really need friends, at this point, I'll be your friend.
Look it up. Okay, Jessica, for those people listening that don't know you, which here in for a real treat, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I founded Hidden Gem Career Coaching. I've been in HR for 13, 14 years now. At this point, I can count. I wrote a book called The Hidden Gem Within that is a journal that helps you look at what you've done well and what you could do differently and how you want to navigate your career. So I'm a little bit of everything. I've now decided I'm going to be a keynote speaker. So that's the newest thing that I'm working on. I want to be like Hibba when I grow up. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to be like you when I grow up. So it goes both ways. We both can be each other when we grow up. It would be fun for me, honestly.
Yeah, like, honestly.
I love your career journal. I literally am looking at it right now because it sits in my eye line as like inspiration for me to someday achieve all my dreams and publish something.
You will.
And I also gift it to a lot of my friends. My friends are like, I don't know what I want to do next in my career. I'm like, hey, I can't help you.
Yeah.
But you know what can? This book. I'm like the worst friend these days. My friends are like, help, I need HR help. And I'm like, here's a book.
Yeah.
It's not
so. Listeners, you should do the same.
It's really great. I highly recommend you get it. I actually journal in it at least once a week, even just thinking about my own career, because there's like a ton of helpful prompts in there that I'm like, I don't stop to really think about what I feel at work until I like open this up and truly try to like digest my feelings. So thank you for that brilliant asset for everybody. Yeah. Okay, now on to today's episode. I am writing this entire quarter, which is such a big feat for me, but I'm excited, all about why people quit their jobs. And I knew I could not do a podcast episode without my self-proclaimed quit queen. Since we both say, Jessica and I both commonly say, like, we'll quit a job.
Oh, yeah.
We'll quit a job real fast. And we know. So I'm asking every guest this season, Jessica, what's one thing a company could do that would make you want to quit?
Unfair compensation. Don't play with my money or I'm out. If you do, beware. And it's funny that I say this because I think a lot of people, when they think of compensation, they only think about it when they're doing an offer letter. But this also goes when people start at the company and then they get to talking to people. They realize that they're not being paid equitably. And so make sure that you do this, because when people find out, they will leave. If I come to a company and this has happened in a past life and I realize somebody in the same role, same experience, was making like $10,000 more than me only because he, let me be clear, he asked for it. Oh, I'm out. I quit. Either you fix it or I leave.
It's really tricky though, because like we as HR, we see everything. So like if you're paying HR people unfairly,
then that's just a bad. There's no. Yeah. And that was the justification, is that he asked for it. He negotiated. So then, quote unquote, then he deserves more money. And this is why I'm very adamant about, I respect companies that say that they don't negotiate. Like this has also happened to me where, you know, at women's conferences, it's literally like you must negotiate. So a lot of women just negotiate just to be negotiating. And I've done that before. Like I'm happy with it, but I'm going to just ask anyway, because why not? And they're like, you know, we don't negotiate. And I respect that. I would rather you say that to me because I didn't ask than I don't receive.
Yeah. And they've actually shown the studies that women do actually try to negotiate more, but then don't actually get the money. Whereas like men negotiate less and do get the money.
Yeah. Because the perception is you should be grateful. Well, why?
Gross.
Yeah.
Gross. Well, I mean, it's just, I'm really heated about it today too, because the WNBA draft was last night and then they released the salaries that all of them are making. And my jaw was on the floor. They make $75,000 their
why
first year.
Why is not making the millions? Why? She's the best shooter.
Whereas the men make millions. I was like,
millions.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
And the justification is like, well, it's about views. No, no, don't take from her talent. She deserves millions just like everyone else. Now, mind you, I did like her Prada outfit. She's going to make millions.
The Prada outfit was great. The Prada outfit was
cute. She was cute. She was giving it to y'all in the glasses too.
Yeah.
But she needs her money and I'm mad for her.
Yeah. Somebody said like, oh, the views. But I'm like, the women's final was viewed by more people than the men's final.
Totally. So make it make sense.
It doesn't. So, but that's not what this episode's about. That'll be another one probably later this season or next season. You and I just talk compensation for the whole thing. I feel you on unfair compensation that actually made me quit a job that I loved dearly.
Mm-hmm.
And I had like an unfair compensation situation and I was like, okay, I can't do this. And it's what made me poke my head out, start looking around for other offers. I got an offer and I was like, you're not going to match this. So I'm just going to go.
Yeah. Peace out.
So it's tough. Yeah, I mean, we'll get there. Okay, so when I outlined the content for this quarter in the newsletter, I talk about these three main pillars that make people want to quit: growth, compensation, and environment. And I want to dig into each one of those with you today and talk a little bit about each of them. So this is kind of like a fun all around, a holistic episode, we'll call it. Okay, so first step, growth. If you were on an HR team that was constantly hearing lack of growth opportunities was the reason why employees were quitting, what would you do?
This has happened to me. I have lived this experience. And the first thing that I always say in this situation is, where's the data? Is it the exit interviews? Is it employee engagement? Where is this coming from? And I need it in writing, because as we know, going and saying like, I'm hearing or I feel, these are trigger words for people to disrespect HR. So don't let that happen to you. You need facts. You need data. You need the people analytics. And so anytime someone's saying, I don't feel like I'm able to grow, has anyone been promoted? And if so, what are their demographics? You know, why are certain people getting growth opportunities or stretch assignments? Do other people even know about these opportunities? So where's the data? That's what, start there. Is it in writing? Do you have an exit interview that said, I'm leaving because I was not able to grow and I've been here 2 years and this person did grow and they've been here 6 months, or this person was ahead of me for a project? So get it all in writing first and then go to leadership. Do not go to them with, I feel, cut it out.
They're going to be like, you feel nothing.
Yeah, no.
I'm going to be like, I feel nothing.
You know?
But they get so many growth opportunities. What are you talking about?
Like, talking about the time.
Yeah, shut it. No. I do love that. Yeah, I have been somewhere as well. Like I had to ask this question because I've been somewhere as well where it kept coming up in exit interviews.
Yes.
And I had to be like, hey, we have a real problem here. If like multiple people are quitting because they don't think there's growth here and we're a rapid pace startup, like we got something real wrong.
And then what does growth mean? I think even in the exit interview data, does growth to them mean that they were getting stretch assignments, that they were on special projects, that they had access? Because sometimes access is what people want. They say growth, but really they want access to leadership.
How can leadership give them that access?
Well, part of it is if you're, I've only been in startups the last couple of years. So making sure that people can like talk to the founders, talk to the CEO, whether that's like skip level meetings, like have access to the leadership team. Whereas at big companies, that's a downfall. You normally don't get that access. So why don't you lean into, why can't they talk to the leadership team? That could be a like informal mentorship or growth opportunity right there. Talking to the CEO is growth in and of itself, like if you're using it in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, if your CEO is competent too and can do that conversation.
We can go down that road.
That is a whole other episode of, look, should your CEO talk to employees or not?
I can't do everything, okay?
So I love our CEO, Adam. We do cold brews with Adam where he gets coffee with like three people once a week. And we like everyone in the company gets to meet him at least once a quarter, just specifically. That's not the only time he's unavailable. He also meets all of our new hires in like a founder session with our two co-founders. They do like a new hire lunch. And then he's also on our all hands every week. But you're right, like access to that type of person, it can seem like growth to somebody. And so I love the what do you mean when you say the word growth? Even when it comes up where people are like, well, I don't have access to growth opportunities. I'm like, tell me what you mean. Yeah.
What? Like, is it define it.
Project. A lot of times people think it means a promotion.
Yes, they do.
And I have such a good question about this, because like, why do so many people hear the word growth and instantly think promotion?
I think we've set it up this way. This is how it's always been set up, that if you're quote unquote growing, you're moving up the food chain. And I also want to know, we talked about like different generations. Some people don't want to move up and they've been told that the only way to get more money is to move up and to be a people leader, even if you don't want to lead people. And so this is why it's so important to have these like tracks where you're like, you can be an individual contributor and become like quote unquote an expert, or you can become a people leader. So that people are not leaders who don't want to be. I have flat out had people tell me, I never wanted to be a leader. This was the only way for me to get more money. So if you set it up that way, that's the only way that people feel like they can grow. So it's set up to be like, you must move up instead of you must actually grow professionally. Because sometimes moving up, you're getting more responsibility, but sometimes you're getting more money. And that's a different story.
My least favorite story. That is my least favorite story. I think you're so right. Like, we talk about this a lot, that we've always said, like, you have to have individual contributor paths. I get so sad when I see companies that are like, the only way to get a promotion here is to be a manager.
What?
I'm like, why? Managers are doing so much harm to people all day long. What they said, remember that stat I could not let go of, that your manager has more of an impact on your mental health than your partner?
Yeah.
Why would you put someone in the position to impact your employees in such a way that could literally make them want to quit and leave your company? And they just don't want to be a manager. They just want more money.
Then make them an expert. Like, let them become an expert in their field. Why not? That's why people think growth. They think promotion because that's all they've ever known. They don't know about other possibilities.
What have you done when you have somebody who's like, I don't want to be a manager?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, I just want more congratulations. Money. Well done.
You're going to be so much happier, actually.
Okay, you know what? Let your therapist know that you have made the right decision, because my therapist would be like, girl, like your life would be way different. Your anxiety level would go down. So first of all, congratulations on being true to who you are, because a lot of people can't do that. Second of all, I would say, what is it that you want? What would growth look like? So if you're an engineer, is it becoming more competent at being an engineer? Is it different forms of engineering? HR, I would say the same thing. Do you want to learn about talent? Do you want to learn about benefits? You want to learn like all these other avenues. What is it you want to learn about, and what would growth look like to you? Because for some people, they want to take classes. Other people, they want to go to conferences. They just want to make sure their network is growing. So you don't have to become a leader, quote unquote, a people leader. You can still do other things. So just writing it out for them, even just having a plan. At my last employer, we did individual success plans where you told your leader, this is what success would look like for me over the next 12 months. And that is how you moved forward. And if that meant you wanted to be promoted or you wanted opportunities, that's something different than saying, I want to stay in this role. There's tons of TikTok videos about, I don't want to be promoted. Or when I do performance reviews, I'm okay with staying the same. That is okay. That is okay. Everybody don't want growth.
Those are my favorite, honestly. Those are my favorite. I'm like, you don't want to grow, you know?
Yes.
I'm just okay being, was like mediocre. Like there was like something else. I was like, I don't need to be accepted.
And that's okay. Basic is fine. Yeah.
I do like the individual success plans because I've heard the word individual development plans where people are like, ooh, we going to pip them and get them out. I like this concept of individual success plans. I've actually never used them, but it puts a lot of the driving on the employee themselves to say, here's how I want to grow.
Yeah.
How do you handle like employees who don't actually know how to grow? Like what advice did you give them when they were thinking through these things?
That absolutely comes up because the way that it's set up is the individual says, this is what I want. And then the manager will say, this is how I'll help you. So they take part of the ownership, but they're not the owner. Like the document is owned by the employee. And the way we did it is people got it at their 90-day mark. So when they started with the company, they had their onboarding period. And then at 90 days, they had a success plan for the next 12 months. What would success look like in the role? And then if they wanted to grow, what would that look like? And then the leader said, this is how I'm going to help you. Part of it is the leader saying, this is what it could look like. Because, you know, for junior employees, maybe they don't know what the next step is. So even telling them, this is why you need succession planning. What would the next step look like? And what is the timeline? That is important. Don't think you're getting promoted in 6 months, depending on the role. Don't, you know, depending on the leader, make that clear. Don't set people up to be like, I've worked so hard. I'm doing all these things. And I thought that this was the expectation, but it's not. So put it in writing and make it clear because a lot of managers don't want to put it in writing because then they're being held accountable for it. So we held leaders accountable. You said you were going to do this for this person. You didn't do it. So don't say that they're underperforming. You didn't help them.
I love that. Wait, I actually like that as a mechanism for accountability on both ends and a way to really foster like a growth environment. Because I think about this a lot, like a growth environment, one where people are learning, they're curious. It's like, I think one of the best environments to exist in. But it's sometimes hard to figure out, like, how do you help people grow? Because I think a lot of people come to me as HR and they're like, well, how do you think I should grow?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'm like, I mean, I can build a leveling map, like the best of them, right? Like I can build a competency map, but like, I can't tell you what's in your heart and soul and what you want to do. And so I like this idea of like using a success plan to say, what do you actually want out of it? And tell your manager. And so your manager can help you.
And it's fluid. So you can change your mind. That's another thing. You could say one day you wanted to be, and we told people this, if you said you wanted to be a manager and at any time you say, you know what, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. Let us know. Do not make your team suffer. We can switch you to an expert track. You will be better off. You will be happier. You can get out of this. So when you tell people like you must pick a track and you must stay the course, you're setting them up because what if they change their mind?
What are some other things that people can do to foster like this environment for growth? I love this individual success plan, but like anything else you've used that has like really helped foster an environment for growth so people don't quit and use growth as the example?
Letting people know about opportunities. So just how we should have transparency when it comes to compensation. We should have transparency when it comes to opportunities. Why are certain people told about growth opportunities and other people are not? Because they haven't been identified as high performing, but what does that actually mean? So making sure that opportunities are open to everyone. So if you're going to have a stretch assignment, why is it just this one person that was told about it? Other people might have been well suited to take the role or to do the stretch assignment, but they were never even told. So opportunity transparency is also very important because that creates a feeling of trust that you're going to tell me when opportunities arise versus, oh, this person has just got a stretch assignment for no reason other than their manager likes them.
And a lot of it does come down to, does your manager like you? I feel like a lot of growth comes down to, does my manager like me and do I work the same way they work? Because if I do, then they will advocate for me to get promoted because they're promoted, right?
So opportunities, putting them out there for everyone to see what the opportunities are so that they can put their name forward. Why not?
The other thing about opportunity is really interesting because they were saying with pay transparency, some of the laws also have written in like opportunity transparency, where it's like you have to tell employees about the next step. Like if they ask you, you have to tell them. And so I just think from like a growth perspective, if you're an HR person listening to this and you're like, oh my God, what do I do? Like having an outlined guide of like where all your employees currently are and what the next step looks like, either title-wise or responsibility-wise, is super important. But then I come back to this just for like people want promotions like every 6 months. What if there's not a next step?
Okay. This is where we get into it. There must be a business need. You could be the best employee, but if there is no business need for you to move to the next step or for this role to be open, then it's not going to be open. And I think we missed that. A lot of people miss that. Like, I should have been promoted. I've been here 2 years, but the company doesn't need that role yet. So that means you need to look elsewhere. And also that should be transparent too, that like, hey, in the next year, you're going to be ready for this, but we do not have this role. That happened to me in the beginning of my career. I had a great mentor. I worked for her for 3 years. She said, you are ready to be a manager, but it's not going to be here because we don't have that role. So the way that it was, the HR team was set up was that she was the HR director and she had business partners, but there was no reason, there wasn't a need for there to be a manager in between. So she said, if you want to move up, I understand, but it won't be here. And I, to this day, respect her. That was 10 years ago.
That's a good manager.
Yeah.
Why would we, I think, lying to someone about a growth opportunity, like, oh, you can totally get this promotion, is like the worst thing a manager can ever do. I literally tell my managers, you are to promise nothing because I can get by on us not having something for them. What I can't get by on is you promising that there's something and then there actually being nothing. Like, I can't manage that. That disappointment is going to breed resentment and they're going to eventually leave.
Yes.
I would rather you just tell them, like, I don't know what's next. And we can work through like how they learn skills, what projects you give them. And maybe that promotion is never there. And we'd be honest if we know it's never going to be there.
But if there's not a business need, there's not a business need. So when she told me this, it wasn't news to me. I knew like, okay, that doesn't make sense. Why would they make me a manager? And so within 6 months I left, but she knew I was looking, like it was part of the process. We were both open, but a lot of people feel they can't do that because, oh, well, then they're going to leave. They're going to leave anyway. And they're going to leave resentful.
Oh yeah. Well, that brings me to my next point of why people leave: compensation.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like we have some juicy thoughts
money, money,
here.
Money.
Okay. I mean, I myself have quit a job for better money, but I have to ask, is quitting for better compensation always a good idea?
It is not always a good idea. It is not. But it's a strong one. Okay. Let me be clear. It's a strong indicator.
Yeah.
But it's not the only way. So it is absolutely not the only way. I have stayed with a company before, knowing that I was not going to get more money, but that I was going to be set up to win in the long term because I got a better title. Now, hear me out, okay? I knew I needed this. It was a VP title. I was like, if I get this VP title, it's going to set me up for the next round because I'm never telling the next company what they paid me here. We're going to base that off of what y'all are saying y'all need. So I just needed the title to then get to where I wanted to be. And I saw it that way. I saw it as a strategic move. Get me the title and then I can get more money down the road. So there was a rhyme and reason to it. And when I told people this, they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, no, get the title. That is always my advice. Get the title. And that opens doors for you that would not have been open before. And my next role was literally skyrocket compared to where I was there because I had that title as far as compensation went. So it's not always the way to do it. So think it through. I've had somebody tell me before, like, oh, you know, stay with the devil that you know. You know, no.
Mm-mm.
New devils
no,
are okay.
The devil.
It's all
no,
the same.
They're all devils, to be very clear. And we're just trying to win
like,
now.
Get a new one, okay?
Quitting from compensation, I like the thought of, like, stay if you're going to get a title and it's going to better set you up in the future.
Mm-hmm.
When people quit for, like, 5 or 10K, it honestly, like, hurts my soul a little bit. And people don't think about like benefits, how much
the
insurance costs. And,
yeah.
And I'm not saying like don't quit for if you need more money to live your life. Life is expensive, right? And it's not getting any cheaper. If you need that 5 to 10K and you know it's going to make a difference in your life, then you should go ahead and quit the job for the compensation. But sometimes I don't actually think it better sets you up than staying and getting a better title, or you already have like the people who want you and who want to advocate for you. That I just find so interesting.
And there's a way to look at it. So I will say I've had people come to me for career coaching before that did not realize they thought because the base number was higher that they were actually getting a raise and they weren't. Once they looked it all out, when it came to at this time, this person was going in an office. So when they thought of the distance, the parking, the benefits changed, like all of it, they actually took a cut, but the base was higher. But once they worked it all out, so make sure that you are actually going through every detail before you accept that offer to see, are you really getting a raise? Because this one was specifically about benefits. They weren't, the previous company covered her dependents and the new company did not. And it was a significant difference.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, people don't, those contributions, people don't understand them, but like we as HR know. And so it's like, you got to look at your benefits. The amount of friends I get that call me about benefits questions. I'm like, call somebody else. Ask ChatGPT. Why are you asking me? No, I'm kidding. I take the calls. Don't get mad at me. I take the calls. I help them. I'm like, tell me more about your insurance plan. I'll tell you what I think. But it brings me to this like other really interesting question. Let's say I'm an employee and I throw a competing offer on the table. Would you match it?
No, bye. And here's why. Because I know this to be true. I have never seen the counter offer work long term. So within 6 months, you're still out. You're still out. So I don't play those games with people. People got mad at me. This was another post that people got pissed about. My stance is if you get another offer, then leave, sweetie. No. Counter offers. Now, mind you, have I had to do counter offers before? Because the leadership team was like, do it. Yes, I have. Did it work? No, it did not.
Every time I've done it anywhere, it's never worked. And the statistically speaking, the person will leave within a year anyways. So it's like, do I want to take the hit on them leaving now and actually fulfill the seat with somebody who might want to be here? Or do I counter it, pay them a little more, and then watch them still slowly disengage? Because a lot of times, while money is nice, that's not ultimately the reason why people leave.
What's up a cheating situation? Like, just like, you know, if your man cheats on you, you might stay with him, but you forever giving him side eye. That's how your boss is looking at you.
I am dying that you made a cheating analogy here. You know, I'm over here saying like, this is HR after dark, honestly. I'm over here saying like, recruiting is like dating. And you're like, yeah, cheating is like a counter offer, you know? Don't do it.
Forever getting a side eye. Okay, they're checking your locations. They want to know who you're talking to. They're looking at your sidebars.
I am dying. They're definitely looking at your LinkedIn, honestly. Oh, yeah. You know when someone takes a counter and you throw a counter and they accept it and you're watching who posts they're liking. You're like, no. You know someone's noticing things.
They're smiling, but they're looking at you.
That, I'm dying. I'm forever going to laugh about this every time I hear this episode now. Because, I mean, you know, cheating is like counter offers. Okay, but bringing us back to compensation. What do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions about when it comes to compensation?
I think what we just talked about, like the total comp package, like people truly don't understand. And this is why I think the total comp statements at the end of the year are so impactful, because people forget about like if you get equity, if they're paying for certain things. Also, other
401k match.
Yeah, like 401k match, other benefits like educational. My last organization gave us like $2,000 a year. So all of those things they paid for us to get like new laptops if we needed them every 2-3 years, like minor things, but they all play a part in like your experience working for this company. And just make sure that you understand that. And a lot of people just look at the base and that's it. And it's much, much more to it.
I used to in my old days.
What is this like?
In the 1800s, I used to look at my offer only as base. No, just kidding. But no, it's a really good point, because I forget about it sometimes too. I'm like, even when employees ask me, like, oh, like I don't cost that much in salary. And I'm like, no, but we also pay your insurance, your 401k match, your taxes on you. Like, you don't just cost the company just like the base, which like people are so much more than the number anyways. But at the same time, I'm still just like, you have to think about the whole thing. Cause honestly, like taking a job for better insurance for me who goes to the doctor regularly, it's actually worth it.
Yeah.
Versus like not.
For me with my twins, insurance is such a big deal for me now. So it's something that I think about in a totally new light. Like before, I'd be like, I don't care about this. I'll just, you know, I'll doctor myself up. Now I'm like, no, interest is very important.
Are my dependents covered? Let me know. Yeah. What percentage, 80 or 90 or 100 if you're really lucky. Like there's a lot of really interesting things there.
Friend, okay, if your listeners don't get mad at me, but you know, I got to keep it 100 with y'all. Another thing why people don't understand is people think they're more important than they are. Okay, let me just say what it is. You are not as important as you think you are to the business. What is your business impact? I'm sorry, I gotta say it. A lot of people think I'm working 1,000 hours, I'm sacrificing this and this, but what does the business impact of your role have? So people think that they're more important, like, okay, I'm amazing at talent and HR. I think I'm worth at least $500,000. Am I gonna get it? You know what I mean? Like, no, what's the business impact of my role? So think about that. Like people, sometimes what I run into is people, when we are transparent with compensation, they see a role and they see the job description, they see how much money it is, and they're like, well, compared to what I do. No. Compare what the business impact of the role is, not you individually. And people get that mixed up.
Yeah, I've been victim to that. I'm the most important person.
Why are they making this? I deserve this. You know, I'm not above it.
I just have to do this, and I'm so sorry to do this, but it's literally one of my favorite lines. There's a line from a Taylor Swift song where she says, okay. I'm the best thing at this party.
Yeah.
And I honestly think about that all the time at work, where I'm like, I'm the best thing at this party. Like, we all have that. We all have that, and it's okay to have it, right? But also, I think what you're saying is, like, bring it back to the business and be realistic. Like, potentially a company may say, hey, you want to make more money? Like, we can't pay you that, and you should just...
Yeah.
And that's why I also say, like, and you and I both say this, like, don't give everything to a company that you could drop dead and they would have your job posted the next day.
Same day. They would be editing.
Same day.
As you were
at the funeral,
yeah.
being lowered into the ground. They'd be like, okay, job's posted.
Yeah.
Taking open recs.
Mm-hmm. Referral. They might be at the funeral asking. We don't know.
I am dying. This episode is the therapy I needed in my life, honestly. But seriously, though, people should remember that. Like, companies will value you by your impact to the company, but also remember, like, value your life more than
your
company, honestly, because
it's not.
No.
And I have a shirt with that on it. Lori Rudiman, who wrote this book, she talks about it, and it's amazing because I've had to learn this lesson, is that my work is not my worth.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, like, I always bring it back to, like, losing my dad and my brother. Both of them had heart attacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, like, one of the leading cause indicators of heart attacks is stress. And I'm, like, literally the one thing that causes people stress the most is their jobs. It is not worth your life. What is it? We are not curing cancer unless you are curing cancer. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. The rest of us, I'm just sending emails.
Yeah.
I will literally just send an email.
That was another LinkedIn post that got people upset. It's not that important, okay? If it's an emergency, there's no such thing as an HR emergency. If so, call 911. Don't call me, okay? I'm up here living my truth.
I am so dead at these people that are mad at your posts that are literally just... I don't understand them. I also, my post about the Kellogg CEO who's like, eat cereal for dinner to save money. People were like, how dare you make fun of this man for doing good marketing for his company? And I'm literally like,
cereal for dinner. Nobody said that. Y'all, get a point.
I literally said in the post, I love breakfast for dinner more than anyone else. I'd be trying to have breakfast for every meal if I could. But at the same time, it mind boggles me sometimes the things people get mad about on LinkedIn. So I'm literally like, all we're doing is advocating for the person. And like, I understand in society, sometimes we're brainwashed to put companies first. And like, I love my company too, but I also love my livelihood and my ability to breathe.
Yeah. I think what rubs people the wrong way between both of us is that we're saying things and we're supposed to be like HR, you're supposed to be... It's almost like the untouchable situation of like, you know, like you're supposed to be above it all. And what I want to do is advocate for people that when I was in the beginning of my career, I wish someone would have said these things. So now the higher up I get, the more I'm like, I'm gonna say whatever I want.
I am not here to say some robotic,
no,
ChatGPT generated bullshit on LinkedIn. I'm here to literally speak the things that I think are wrong with our industry, which a lot of us are willing to do now. And I want to fix it. Because employees need to have better experiences at work.
Yeah.
They need to, and I want them to. And like, that is why this whole quarter of topic is about quitting. Because I'm like, people will quit if you treat them badly, which is a perfect segue into my third topic.
Let's do it.
Environment. Okay. So you and I talk about this a lot, but what I have to know, what are your red flags that an environment is toxic?
Ooh, blame culture. That's one that I... it just gets to me, the blame culture of like somebody has to take the blame. I've been in situations before where we have been in meetings and it has been said, who's taking the blame for this? What? Why does somebody need to take the blame? Why can't we work on a solution? So if there's a culture of like somebody has to take the blame for a mistake instead of this is a mistake, this is what we can learn from it. And I personally am one of those people. Even as a kid, I've always been the person like, you can't tell on me, I'm going to tell on myself. So when teachers be like, I'm going to call your mom and be like, no, let's call her all together. Let's call her. I'll tell her. You know, you don't have to call her. You know, so that's how I feel even at work. Like, you can't tell on me, I'm going to tell on myself. But I think that's accountability versus like somebody needs to be blamed and needs to be told like in this environment. This was also brought up in like the all hands company meeting of like, this person made a mistake. And that was the culture. So you just know what you were getting into. Another thing is inconsistent policies. Like, why does the policy only apply to certain people? Why do certain people,
like, but,
you know, get a pass? I've seen this, unfortunately, when it came to claims of harassment, things that were very serious that, oh, no, this person, you know, this person could never do that.
They didn't mean to be say that.
oh no, they never mean to say it. It just slipped out. They said the quiet part out loud.
They definitely meant to say it.
And then unresolved conflict, you can tell, I absolutely can get in a room with two people and be like, okay, these people don't like each other, but I don't know why. So then when you're in a new organization, you don't know historical context. I have interviewed with a team before where instantly I knew the CFO and the CEO hated each other in the interview. I was like, I don't know why y'all talking over each other. Y'all asking me contradictory questions. Then I started at the company and it was very clear to me why they did not like each other. That should have been a red flag. But to be honest, I was like, I can fix them. Again, analogy with a man. You cannot fix them.
Literally, I say this all the time. I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to fix no men, and I'm not here to, to try to fix up. I'm here to try to fix the companies, but sometimes you have to admit you can't fix everybody.
So this was back in the day where I thought I could fix people. I've also, you know, back before I met my husband, I used to date what I call Build-A-Bears. I thought I could build them up. I can't.
I used to date Build-A-Bears. I'm dying.
Every startup is like a Build-A-Bear, honestly.
Sometimes you got to just decide you can't do it anymore. You have enough
bears. So you translated your Build-A-Bear status with men to companies now.
Yeah.
Same, though, because I'm like, where's the problem? Let me fix it. I don't know what. I don't know if it's just like the younger child in me. Even though we like had literal conflict in our family and I was like not equipped to fix anything as the youngest child. Now as an adult, I'm like, I can fix everything.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, tell me all the problems. And then I'm like, I can do it. No, I'm still learning this lesson.
You and me both. Those are really good flags for red flags for cultures, though, because the conflict one is fascinating because conflict's like, I write about this a lot, too, right? The way we solve conflict as adults is like the way we observe conflict growing up. And a lot of us did not observe conflict being resolved in a healthy way growing up. So then we get into the workplace and we have conflict and we make everyone uncomfortable and then it's never solved. I think a lot of the reason why people leave toxic environments is it's high conflict with low resolution.
Yes, you are so right.
Versus like high conflict with high resolution is like, oh, we're having conflict over good things and it's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and toxic managers, honestly.
Yeah, major difference between those.
Well, then it makes me think, like, can HR ever, like you said, Build-A-Bear, can HR ever fix these environments? Is it possible?
It is possible, but it takes more than HR. So I have been in situations where I was the one advocating. I was taking all the blame. I was doing all the things and some things got fixed. But at the same time, if it's an underlying current, you cannot fix that by yourself. Like if the leadership team is not on the same page, like, I don't care how many conflict resolution meetings I had with this CEO and CFO, it was above me. Okay. There was no way. And we brought in external support. Like we did all the things and it was above us. Like there was just no way these two people needed to be working together. So I say that to say you can help. You can be a part of the solution, but do not take it all on. Don't be out here doing the Build-A-Bear situation. Okay. I've done it. I'm in it. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
I think where I've seen good changes in environments is that the leaders, especially if it's like a startup, the founders are actually bought into changing the thing. Where I've seen it go terribly awry is like where nobody cares and it's gone years unchecked and it's just institutional at that point. Like it's ingrained in the DNA of your organization that it is toxic.
Yes.
And nothing HR people can do. I think it's hard though because like, we don't like to give up.
No.
I don't like to give up. I don't think you like to give up. I think a lot of the people I know in HR don't want to give up. And so it's so hard to think about, like, at what point does HR say, I cannot do this anymore?
It is the employee advocacy part of it for me. I have quit jobs and still been talking to the employees that were at said jobs and trying to help them and support them. So I'll quit and still be trying to help people that are there. Now, I wouldn't help the leadership team, but I was still advocating for employees, okay? So the employee advocacy part of it is just so big for so many of us because we don't want to let that go. Like, I truly want to show up for employees. I want to basically be the advocate between them and leadership if I can to, like, make things better. But at the same time, you cannot take it all on.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. I literally just got a LinkedIn DM from someone from two jobs ago that was like, hey, this thing happened. Can you help me? I'm like, whoa, hey,
yeah. Yes.
What's up? I'm here still, years later. People still remember me.
Absolutely.
Loved a good mark on them. But yeah, I think you're right. It is really hard for us when we're dealing with these environments. And that's also the hard part coming up that I'm going to be writing about is like, we are often seen as the responsible one for environment and culture, but I can't say this enough. It is everyone's job. Mm-hmm. And when people come to me and complain about cultural things, I, especially leaders or like a founder, I literally have to be like, hello, person, here's a mirror.
Yeah.
You need to look at yourself in the mirror first. Are any of those behaviors your behaviors? If the answer is yes, then you literally created this
ownership.
But it's like, it's really hard to get people to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times we're like in such a, I don't know, like we're like in a conflict heavy job. I feel like I have to make people understand things about themselves that they probably don't want to reconcile. And that gets really hard. It becomes a hard part of this job where I feel like I'm constantly having to like help them learn the negative things about themselves in order to make the environment and the team better.
You know, this reminds me, I was recently reading something where it talked about how training and development at work leads to people being better in their home life. And this is what it reminds me of, because it's like the flip side of that is the things that people are doing wrong in their personal lives normally also show up at work. So just like I was just talking about myself, like I was out here, you know, thinking I could fix people. I was doing that same stuff in my personal life and my professional life. So it normally shows up both ways.
Oh, that's such a good spot to end on. I really like that. Okay, well, I mean, maybe look at your personal life and figure out what behaviors are showing up there. We're not building any bears.
Okay, I've been there, done that. I got a man now. Okay, I have amazing husband now. He was not a Build-A-Bear. Shout out to Aaron.
Also, yes.
Shout out to Aaron. He's so great, y'all. I love him.
I'd be liking all his posts on LinkedIn. I'd be hugging him when I see him in person. I'm like, Aaron, how are you?
Oh my goodness. We've come a long way, okay? There is hope for all of us.
Exactly. I love that. We can end on that note. Okay, so we talked a lot about, let's do a quick recap. We talked a lot about why people quit jobs from the lens of growth, compensation, and toxic environments. We covered so, so much. I think like your point coming back to like the exit interviews, really looking at like what people are saying can be really powerful. I think looking at how fast people are leaving is also a super powerful metric. And being able to understand the story and relying on facts versus going to your executive team with feelings. Which like I have a lot of feelings. I'm a Pisces baby. So like I'd be having them a lot. But also I usually start with the facts. And then I say, here's what I think is going on. Take the word feel out of it.
The feelings are very context. So context, it adds color to everything, but start with the facts.
Yes, I love that. Okay. So for people who love and adore you from listening to this episode and who don't, aren't connected with you yet, how do they find you?
Absolutely. Find me on LinkedIn. I post every day. I have a lot of feelings, like Ava just said. Jessica D. Winder, or you can search for Hidden Gem Career Coaching.
Or you can find her on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. Or on Reddit, honey. On there getting dragged on the daily.
If you have haters, you've made it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then I made it a long time ago.
I am waiting to be on LinkedIn Lunatics. Here's me manifesting it. And you'll catch me next month on LinkedIn Lunatics. Okay. Anyways, thank you so much, Jessica, for joining me today. You know, it's always a pleasure. You are always welcome back on this podcast. At least once a season, there will be an episode of Jessica because she's the best. Maybe sometimes twice a season. We'll see. And thank you so much. And I hope none of your employees quit today.
Thank you.
Oh, also, I'm supposed to say this is new this season. If you like this, and I hope you do, because I feel like I have a really good time recording this, you should leave a comment or like the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. I butchered that, but like, you know, there's a way where you can write a comment. Please write a nice one. And then tell me you love this podcast.
Oh, yeah. If it's not, you know, five stars, you're a hater. The end.
Okay, everyone, this is great. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. Keep up with all the latest HR resources by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. And if you love I Hate It Here, tell an HR friend. I'll see you next time.